All right, Rabbi, say good morning. Good morning, good morning. First of all, the Freilich and Torah of Katan, a grace to host Baruch Hashem to be able to learn together. Close out the week together. Begin by thanking all of our sponsors. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Adar Aleph, Abadim Latov, Mrs. Selma Wolf, for dedicating all of Hashem and Drushos this month with immense gratitude for the refuos from Hashem, in the merit of a refuos Shema for all of those in need, in the schos of our brave soldiers, and in the schos of the return of our hostages. The Schwartzbaum family, in memory of Rabbi Aaron Schwartzbaum, Aaron Yosef Ben Meir, Zichron Levracha, the Ziv Levine and Berman families, in memory of William Ziv, Zev Shmuel Ben Yisrael, Zichron Levracha, and Gabi and Shana Cohn, sponsoring the daf this morning. Re'ilui Nishmas, Shina's grandfather's yard site, Kamen Eliezer Ben Avram Halevi. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshama Slav and Aliyah and the family is a Nechama. We also, of course, dedicate all of Mesechaz Baba Kamal Le'ili Nishmas, Master Sergeant Eliyah Michal Harush, Hashem Yikom Damo, Me'akadosh Baruch, who provide his Neshama with an Aliyah and his family in Nechama. Rabbi, so with that, let us begin. We have a lot to do today, Baruch Hashem, but we're going to be great. So today's daf is Kuf Yud Gimel, 113, and we are picking up Emir Hashem on Kuf Yud Beis, Amar Rav. So we are starting, it is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 lines up from before the widest lines. So Amar Rav. So let's remember again, we started this topic yesterday about the concept of whether or not we require both litigants to be present when going ahead and adjudicating a case. So Amar Rav, Mekaymenes Hashar Shel Bifnei Baldin. You can go, so Rav says, you can go ahead and do Kiyum Shtar. So let's remember again, Kiyum Shtaris is the concept of certification of a document. In other words, you have a document. Technically speaking, you know, we like to think that if you have a shtar, you have an uncontestable or incontestable claim. It's not true. Somebody could challenge the validity of the shtar. So therefore, in order to go ahead and prevent that, there is a concept or a process called Kiyum Shtaris, certification of documents, where essentially, again, document is brought forth before Beis Din, and just like it sounds like, Beis Din certifies that this is indeed a correct or, you know, a truthful document. They put their stempel on it, right? And they go ahead and now we're good. See, remember again, like Lunar is correct. So this way again, even if subsequently you can't find the witnesses or anything like that, no one could really ever challenge the validity of the shtar again. So Rav says, you're able to go ahead and be mekayim shtar even not in the presence of the baal din. So let's say, for example, Reuven lent Shimon $1,000. So Reuven now wants to certify the document. Let's say Shimon can't show up in Beis Din. So Rav says, we'll certify the document even if the borrower cannot show up. Rabbi Yochanan amar ein mekayim shtar if nei baal din. So Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you can't. You can't do that. Can certify a document if the borrower is not there. Rashi says over here, Rashi says, just to give it a context, Rashi says, Mekaymenes Hashtar, Hayu Eidim Achasumim Mevakshim Leilich Lemedina Sayam. So just a simple idea over here. Normally, remember, the way we certify a document is we go ahead and we call in the witnesses. That's what we do. Is this your handwriting? Do you remember the transaction? But again, now let's say we know the witnesses are going overseas. Right? Let's say Meretz Hashem, they have a granddaughter's chasana in Eretz Yisrael that they're leaving to, right? So what's going to happen? They're not going to be around. So therefore, we want to make sure that we go ahead and we certify that document. So Machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rav. Can you do it without the presence of the borrower? I'm going to tell you the reason, Rabbi Yochanan's logic, why Rabbi Yochanan does not allow Kiyum Shtaros without the presence of the borrower. It's very simple. Amar Kra, Behuad Bivalov, V'lo Yishmarenu. The Torah says, ultimately, again, talking about Vosei, by the way, this is like a blast from the past. Right? Do you remember, again, when we were learning about the Muad and the Tam and everything? So the Torah says, V'huad biv alav, you will go ahead and you will warn the animals, right? If the animal is becoming a habitual gorer, so you will go ahead and you will warn the owner. So V'huad biv alav, V'lo Yishmarenu. You warned the owner, and yet the owner still was not vigilant. Amr Torah, Yavo Bal Ashar, V'ya'amod Al Shara. The Torah says, let the Bal Ashar come, right? The Bal Ashar has to be present and literally again stand by Yisrael. The idea being that the party that is going to be liable has to be present. Has to be present. So Rabbi Yochanan therefore says, you can't do anything with this shtar if the borrower is not present. That's not fair. And therefore, he can't even do Kiyum Shtar without the presence of the borrower as well. Okay. Amar Rav, Rav says, Hilchasa, Mekaymenes Hashtar, Shalom Bifnei Baldin, Vafilo Omed Vitzavach. So Rava says, the halacha is, halacha l'maisa, you could do kiyum shtaris even not in the presence of the borrower. And even if the borrower is going in and saying, no, I need to be there, or casting doubt on the validity of the shtar, you could still do the process even without the borrower. V'i amar. So I'll say, now watch this. V'i amar nakitu li zimna ad demay sinasa had demar le l'shtara. I suppose they say, now, what happens if the borrower says, but 1 second, don't certify it yet. Give me time to bring counter testimony about the document. I will say, whatever that counter testimony is, the counter testimony could be the document is forged, the counter testimony could be I repaid the debt, whatever. So I will say, so now he's crying out, don't certify it yet because I have a counterclaim. Then the halacha is, the Gemara says, first of the widest lines, I will say, so naktina le, we give him time. Fine. In other words, if you go ahead and that's your claim, then we will go ahead and delay. We will go ahead and delay certifying the document until you have a chance to prove your claim. I asa asa, I lo asa, lo asa. If he shows up, he shows up. If he doesn't show up, then at the end of the day, he doesn't show up. So we'll say, so first of all, what a profound document. What a profound document. What a profound statement, sorry. What a profound statement. I asa asa, I lo asa, right? I lo asa, lo asa. Or we'll say sometimes life is just about showing up. If you show up and you do what you're supposed to do, then great, fantastic. If you don't show up, then at the end of the day, don't have any tainus as to why things don't happen. Sometimes in life, we don't put in the requisite effort for something. We're like, man, I can't believe that didn't materialize. Of course it didn't materialize. You didn't roll up your sleeves. The marriage you wanted didn't happen. You know why? Because you didn't work hard enough on it. The children you wanted to raise didn't turn out the way. Well, that's not always fair because even you could put in all the effort and kids still do their own thing, right? But Lamaisa, at least to put know that I put it in the Hishtadlus. My learning, my ruchnius is not where I wanted. How did this happen? I lo asa. If you don't show up, then the things you want out of life are not going to occur. Natrina le bahab. So we'll say, so what we do is, how long do we give him? We give him bahab. A Monday, a Thursday, and a Monday. Now we'll say, now what's the idea over here? Because remember, this is Beis Din we're talking about. So when does Beis Din sit in session? Beis Din sits in session on Mondays and Thursdays. So essentially what we do is, we give him the span of 3 sessions to get his act together, and to go ahead and, if he has counter testimony, bring it now. Ilo asa. Now I'll say, now watch. These are fascinating gemaras, because here we're getting a little bit of a window into the intricacies of Beis Din. Ilo asa kasvina pesicha iluya. Tishin Yomin. So we'll say, now watch this. So let's just play this out. Reuven lent Shimon $1,000. Reuven comes to Beis Din and wants to certify the document. Shimon says, please, don't certify it yet. I have testimony that's going to erode the authenticity of this document. Beis Din says, fine. We're going to go ahead and give you some time to be able to do what you have to do. How long do we give him? Essentially three sessions. We'll call it like a week and a half. Right? A Monday, a Thursday, and a Monday. Monday, Thursday, Monday. If you go ahead and you can bring your testimony, great. If you can't bring your testimony, I will say, then what's the next step? Kasvina psicha. And I will say, now what's a psicha? Take a look at Rashi. Psicha. Shtar shamta al she'in parechov. We excommunicated. Now I will say, but a psicha is excommunication in writing. In writing. So we go ahead and we write down the excommunication. And I will say, so now what happens? Kasvina psicha aliyah. Tishin Yomin. I will say, what we do over here is, it goes into effect in 90 days. In 90 days. Now watch this. Tlasa Kamein, I will say, now remember, excommunication is fantastic. I mean, it's not fantastic. But if you're Reuven, you don't really care so much about excommunication. What do you care about? Right? Money. Right? Money. Where's the money? So I will say, so now watch this. The excommunication is the first part of collection. So watch this. So I will say, we allow this process to span 90 days. So Tishin Yomin, Tlasin Kamay Lo Nachtila Nechase. So we'll say for the first 30 days, we don't descend into Shimon's property to seize money. Right? Why? Da'amar Katarach Bezuzi V'Nezov. Because you figure for the first 30 days, okay. But we'll say at this point in time, remember, Shimon's under a ban of excommunication. So therefore, he realizes that this is serious. He's got to pay the debt. So we don't seize property for the first 30 days, figuring he's trying to borrow money. He's trying to borrow money in order to go out and pay off Reuven. So Mitzi'ay Nami Lo Nachtila Lein Milchase. For the second 30 days, we'll call day 31 through 60, we're also not going to seize property. Why? Because we figure now at this point, if Shimon's been unable to borrow money, what is he doing? He's selling off assets. He's selling off assets in order to find money to pay off Reuven. In the last 30 days, we also won't descend into Shimon's property. Why? Because you figure maybe he's found a buyer for property, but what? Now his buyer needs to find sufficient funds to cover the purchase as well. So we'll say, so then what happens? Lo asa, but at the end of 90 days, Shimon does not show up with the money. Kasvinan ad karta anechase. Ultimately, Henry Russell, we write an adkarta. What's an adkarta? Rashi says over here, psak din leiret hamava l'soch nechasim shalova v'litlein b'shuma b'chovo. So Rabbi says, if at the end of 90 days, Shimon has not come back with the money, we essentially write a document of collection. Right? So an adkarta is a document that allows Reuven to go and collect from Shimon's property. Incredible, Rabbi says. So Rabbi says, I just want to point out over here how beautiful. What a moving Gemara. What a moving Gemara. Why is it moving, you'll ask? Funny you should ask, I'll tell you. So I'll say it's moving because look how much limud schos, right? Look how much we go out of our way to attribute positive motivations to Shimon's failure to pay. I didn't show up the first 30 days, he's probably borrowing money, right? He didn't show up the second 30 days, he's probably selling off, trying to find a buyer for property. He didn't show up the last 30 days, the buyer is probably trying to go ahead and come up with the funds for the property purchase. We'll say, that's what it means to be a yid. To be a yid means to be down the kaf suchos, to give someone the benefit of the doubt. However, here's what's interesting. At the end of 90 days, what do we do? We write a document of collection. Because we'll say, you have an obligation to be down the kaf suchos, not to be down the kaf shtos. In other words, that at the end of the day, you have to give someone the benefit of the doubt, but you are also allowed to be real. And I will say, at the end of the day, as much as I have to give you the benefit of the doubt, you also have an obligation to act justly. So for 90 days, we'll give Shimon the benefit of the doubt. At the end of 90 days, you borrow money, you got to pay it back. So at the end of 90 days, Reuven's getting his adkarta, and he's going to go and collect his money. All right, v'ani mili b'milva. We'll say this is true when it's talking about a loan. Aval b'pikadon la'alta kasin. And we'll say, now the chap over here is we only give this window of collection for a loan because milva l'hotzan nitna. Therefore, when you get loan money, you know, it's understandable you're going to spend that money and therefore you may not have it readily available. However, a pikadon, right? If Reuven deposited an object for Shimon and Shimon's sole job was to what? Was to watch that object, then halacha l'maisa, there's no 90-day period. Shimon's got to give that back immediately. And if he doesn't, we write the adkarta immediately as well. But I will say, when we write an adkarta, we only write an adkarta, ultimately, again, for real property, not for movable property. This is actually going to be very important. Why? Because what are we concerned about? We're concerned that if we write an adkarta, a document of collection for movable property, what's going to happen? The lender is going to go and collect movable property from the borrower, right? He's going to consume it. And what happens? If he asi love umaisi sahadi umeru l'shtara lo mashkech midi l'migbe. So they'll say, here's the issue. There is always still the possibility that what? There's always still the possibility that halacha l'maisa, the borrower, Shimon, is going to bring witnesses to say that the whole loan document was fraudulent. It's always possible. So because remember, that's his claim. His whole chap is the reason why he's asking for time is because originally he wanted to bring witnesses that the whole thing was this. He couldn't find the witnesses, so now he has to pay. So he says, here's the concern. If one day he does show up with witnesses and Reuven has been consuming metaltolin, there's no way for Shimon to get back that property from Reuven because it's been consumed. However, if we deal with real property, the good thing is if somehow, for some reason down the road, Shimon does go ahead and bring witnesses that the claim was fraudulent, then what? Real property still exists. He could go in and technically speaking claw that back. Interesting. The Islam Mekarkai, the Malve Kasina. However, again, if the Malve, right, so if Reuven is real property, we were then allowed to consume movable property even of Shimon, because even if Shimon were to come later on and to show that the document was fraudulent, we'd be able to reclaim the consumed movable property from the real property of Reuven. So fascinating. But Lohi, the Gemara says, no, actually, that's not the way you operate. At karta metalti lo kasvinon, afagav de islei mikarkoi, chayshina shematachsif. So the Gemara says, at the end of the day, no, we only write in that karta, we only write a document of collection on real property of the borrower, right? And even if the lender himself had real property, we're still not going to write a collection document for movable property. Why? Because we're concerned that the movable property of the lender will depreciate. And when we go ahead and we write this document of collection, modi'inon le. So ultimately, I will say we make it known. We make it known. The Gemara says, modi'inon le, v'hadi mili demikrov, aval demirchak lo. But again, the Gemara says, that's only when he's in close proximity. But if he's far away, we don't do this. V'i mirchak, v'ika krovim, inami ika shayarta da'azli va'asu hasam, mishanin ale treisa yarchi, shasa. So we'll say, so furthermore, this is only true if what this idea that, I'm sorry, inami ika shayarta da'azli, sorry, let me read that again. V'hanimili, this is only said, demikrov, aval mirchak lo. V'imirchak v'ika krovim, but ultimately, again, if he's far, but there's something closer. Inami ika shayarta da'azli va'asu hasam, or there are caravans that go back and forth. Mishayin alei treisa yarche shasa ad da'azli va'ase shayarta. Then we'll go ahead and we'll wait for the amount of time that someone could travel back and forth in the caravan. The Gemara gives an example of this. Kiha t'ravina shah alamar acha treisa yarche shasa ad da'azla va'asya shayarta mibei chozoi. As Ravina went ahead and waited for Mar Acha 12 months, the amount of time that it would have taken for the caravan to go back and forth from Bechozoi. Velohi, the Gemara says, that's not really a good raya. It's not a good raya. Why not? Good. Why not? Velohi, Hasam Inish Alimahavo. There I will say the difference is that the lender was a powerful man. Ihavyamati ad karta liyode. Had we given him an ad karta immediately, lo hava efshar la'afuke mine. There would have been no possibility to extract the property from his possession if it turned out that the document was indeed fraudulent. Aval hacha lo natrina le ad da azo shlicha betlasa shabasa va'asa ba'arba b'shabsa ulachamsha b'shabsa. So we'll say in a normal circumstance, what we do is like this. We give a very short window for all of this to occur. We dispatch the shliach based in on a Tuesday, right? We assume that he's going to get there on a Wednesday, and we give the summoned party up until Thursday to go ahead and show up. So the Gemara says, and by the way, this shliach, when we dispense a shliach from Beis Din to go ahead and deliver this summons, we go ahead and we vest him with the credibility as if he was two witnesses. Take a quick look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Over shliach terabanan shalach lahazmin ish ledin the chazav amar lebeis din ena rotsa lavo." So we'll say, so now watch what's happening over here. So remember what we're going through over here, which is really just quite fascinating, is just the procedural process of Beis Din, about how Beis Din deals. So remember, just how do we get here? We got here because we're in the sugya of whether or not you could do kiyum shtaris without the presence of the borrower. So we'll say, so then the Gemara launched into the entire process about what we do when the borrower wants to contest the validity of the document but can't come up with witnesses. So we give him time, 90 days, ad karta, psi or psicha, ad karta, fine. So now, we'll say, so now the Gemara says that when the shliach Beis Din goes ahead and delivers the summons and comes back to Beis Din and says, let's say he's delivering a summons to Shimon, the borrower, you got to come to Beis Din. And Shimon says, I'm not coming. And the shliach Beis Din shows up and says, Shimon says he's not coming. We believe that shliach Beis Din, right? We believe that shliach Beis Din as if he was two witnesses and would begin the entire, we'll call it, excommunication process based on his words. So the Gemara says, so we'll say that's true in terms of like shamta, excommunication, aval psicha, but I'll say when it comes to psicha, so remember again, I'll say shamta is just verbal excommunication, psicha, as we saw before in Rashi, is a shtar shamta, is an excommunication that is put into writing. So we'll say when it comes to shamta, when it comes to psicha, sorry, kevan de mamona kamachasrele, de kaboyle le mesav le zuzi le safra lo. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. When we say that we believe the shliach Beis Din like two witnesses, when is that? That's for shamta. That's for verbal excommunication. When it comes to psicha, which is a written excommunication, which then has an outlay of cash. Because remember, again, someone needs to pay the scribe. So that you need real testimony for. Because they will say that's going to create financial liability. So the shliach based, and again, as credible as he is not going to be counted as two witnesses for that. Incredible. Amar Rabino, Yavino zimna apuma. So what's the Gemara says as follows. We go ahead, look at Rashi. Yavina zimna mizamnin baldin liyom ploni ladin. We deliver a summons. We deliver a summons, right? Based literally through the mouth of a woman. In other words, that a woman could act as a shliach bezdin to go out and deliver a summons. Or a puma de shivvi. So what's I say? So or through neighbors. Or through neighbors. Follow Amr. But say first, I'll take a look at Rashi. So Yavina Zimna mezamnin badin liyom ploni ladin. We'll summon a litigant for a particular day and base. And Api Ish Rashi says Haleches etzlo lefi darka o Api shchinav v'samchinan alayu davdino shlichus saihu v'ilo asi mechaskinan bafkura mishamtinali. So I'll say, watch this. This is fascinating. So let's see. Beis wants to deliver a summons. You could deliver a summons through a woman. You could deliver a summons through a neighbor. In other words, these would be people with whom the defendant would come in regular contact with. And if he doesn't show up, we'll say if he does. So watch this. Let's say Bazin says to a particular neighbor, deliver this summons to Shimon. Shimon doesn't show up. So we'll say. So we assume that the woman or the neighbor carried through on their responsibility. And we assume that the reason that Shimon didn't show up is because he's ignoring the summons. Very important. So much for law amran el delese b'masa. So we'll say furthermore again. And we only said this el delese b'masa. Rashi says b'masa. She'ein osa ploni achsha bi'ir shebezdin ba from the shechinav kishiyasha ploni amran lelevo. So we'll say, when would you do this? When would you do this? You would do this when Shimon is not currently in town. So therefore, because he's not currently in town, we tell the woman or we tell the neighbor, listen, when Shimon gets back into town, you're going to see him, give him the summons. Top of Kuf Yud Gimel. Aval Isi B'masa Lo. So we'll say, but again, but if he's in the city, then we wouldn't use this. Da Aminon Emar Lo Amrule, Da Aminon Emar Lo Amrule, Da Amri Ashkechinu Shlicha De Bezin Va Amrule. So we'll say, this is actually very interesting. We only rely on this when Shimon is currently not in town. We need to serve him a summons. We're nervous that Bazin's not going to see him. So we rely on the weird neighbor, we rely on the woman. However, if Shimon is in town, Rabosai, then ultimately, again, we don't necessarily rely on the woman or on the neighbor. Why? Because the woman or the neighbor could say this, listen, Shimon's in town. The Shliach Bazin is going to see him just as quickly as we're going to see him. So therefore, they'll probably deliver the summons, and we don't have to worry about executing on our agency. Fascinating. Furthermore, v'lo amr ella d'lo chalif abava de bedina. We'll say fourth line down from the top, 113a. Furthermore, this is only talking about a situation where, let's say, Shimon on his way to work doesn't normally pass by the bezdin. Ava chalif abava de bedina, lo. We'll say, but if Shimon normally passes by the bezdin, let's say on his way to work, so we don't rely on the woman or on the neighbor to serve the summons. Why? Amri ashkechua bedina va'amrele. Because they assume, right? We'll say they assume that the woman or the neighbor assumes that since Shimon anyway passes by the Beis Din on his way to work, Ab Beis Din will serve him the summons. Furthermore, again, I will say, this is only true. When do we rely on the woman or on the neighbor to deliver the summons to Shimon? When Shimon's out of town? Only if Shimon is coming home that day. But if Shimon is not coming home that day, Rabbi says, it's incredible, then we don't rely on them. Why? Because Rabbi says, what do we assume? They forgot. Rabbi says, it's incredible. It's such a great gemara of human nature, right? Of how people assume that someone else did the job, right? Or how even when you entrust someone, again, Rabbi says, people forget to do stuff. Incredible. Amar Rava, hay man dichsiv alei psicha, Aldulo Asiladina. So we'll say Beis Din wrote a Shtar Psicha. So remember again, what's that Shtar Psicha? Shtar Psicha is a document of excommunication. So Beis Din wrote a document of excommunication for someone because again the guy didn't show up to Beis Din. Okay. So we'll say, so what's the halacha? Ad Asiladina lo mekarinale. So we'll say, so ultimately, when do we tear up the document? The document of excommunication? When? When he shows up. What about another case where Beis Din issued a psak and someone is non-compliant with the psak of Beis Din? So therefore, Beis Din writes a document, essentially an excommunication as well. When do we tear that one up? So the Gemara says, so we'll say, when he complies, we'll tear it up. V'loy, the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. When a person is in non-compliance with the Psak Beis Din, we don't wait for him to be in compliance. Rather, again, as soon as he says he's going to be compliant, we tear up the document. Incredible. Amar Chista, Kovim Zman Shmini V'chamisha V'sheni. So we'll say, so remember again, we go ahead, as we saw before, that when a person is going ahead and claiming that he has counter testimony, so what do? We give him a Monday, a Thursday, and a Monday to be able to go ahead and bring his witnesses. Zimna, Basr Zimna. So we'll say, we give him time after time. Good. So what's the halacha? So the Gemara says, if you look at Rashi says, Kovin Zman. It's almost right across in Rashi. Rashi says, Liyom Sheni B'Shabbos, Vim Lo Yavo Mezamnin Oso Liyom Chamishi, Vim Lo Yavo Mezamnin Oso Liyom Sheni, Va'ad Lamachar Lo Kazvino Psicha, Shekal Yom Amtinen Shema Yavo. So we'll say, so like we saw before, we give him a Monday, a Thursday, and a Monday. And I will say, now this is actually talking about a different kind of case over here. According to Rashi, this is a stam. Beis Din is summoning someone to Beis Din. Beis Din is summoning someone. So what happens? We summon him on Monday, he doesn't show up. We summon him for the following Thursday, he doesn't show up. We follow him on Monday, and he doesn't show up. Okay, so we'll say, so now if he doesn't show up that last Monday, then what's the halacha? Lamachar kasvinon. The next day, we go ahead and rewrite this document, this psicha, this document of excommunication. Rav Asi. So Rav Asi ikla be Rav Kahana. Rav Asi went to ask Rav Kahana. Chazahu isesa ta'azamna ledina. So we'll say they saw. So in other words, he went to the Beis Din, essentially Rav Kahana, and he saw that they had summoned a particular woman to Beis Din. Bepanya in the morning. Ubitzafra ksiv ale psicha. Sorry, in the evening. In the evening. So they summoned her in the evening, and already the next morning they wrote the document of excommunication. So the Gemara says, so he says, Amr Leh, he said to him, Lo Sarva Lamar Lahad Amr of Chista, Kovis Man Sheni Vechamisha Vesheni. What's that? That's not what we said before. We said that when summoning someone to Beis Din, you give time. You give a Monday, a Tuesday, and a Thursday. Right? And then, sorry, a Monday, a Thursday, and a Monday. And then only if after that, if they don't show up, then you write the Psicha. Rabbi say here, they essentially were summoning her on one day, and by the next day, they were already writing the document of excommunication. Amr Leh, Hanimi Li Ga, this is interesting. Hanimi Li Gavra Da Anis Vele Se Bemasa. Alright, so let's say it's interesting, obviously reflecting a different societal norm. So let's say, so again, when do you need this longer amount of time? By a man who apparently often, because of his parnasa, wasn't in town. Therefore, sometimes he didn't receive the summons, you have to give a longer time. But a woman, who at least, again, in times of the Gemara, was not working out of the city, was available. And therefore, if she did not show up immediately following the summons, then that she's a moredes. Then again, she's automatically or immediately non-compliant, and therefore we can write the shtar psicha right then. Interesting. Rabbi Yehuda, lo yahaitna zmana lo biyomi niso lo mitishra. Both say it's incredible. Beis Din does not summon someone to show up during Nisan or during Tishrei. Rabbi say, now why not? Rashi says over here, we're almost right across. Lo yavina zmana lo biyomi Nisan, e mizamnin adon ledin b'nisan u'b'tishrei, shuzman kotzir u'batzir. Rabbi say, this is incredible. So Nisan is the harvest season for wheat, right? And Tishrei is the season for grape harvest, right? So therefore, again, in other words, we'll say essentially, you can't summon someone to Beis Din during the harvest season because people are working. Incredible. We'll say not only that, lo b'ma'ale yom ha'tavach, v'lo b'ma'ale shabsa. You can't summon someone on Erev Yom Tiv or on Erev Shabbos. Erev Shabbos. We'll say, by the way, what are the chances of learning an Erev Shabbos Gemara on Erev Shabbos? Wow. Well, look, you hit the jackpot. We'll say, and even in the Shtekel Erev Yom Tiv, right on Purim Katan. Incredible. Aval, Minisan Labasar Yom Minisan, or Yom Tish Labasar Tishrei Kavina. We'll say, but what can you do? You could summon someone on Nisan for after Nisan, or on Tishrei for after Tishrei. Mimale shapsa la basa male shapsa lo kavinon. But say this is incredible. However, what you can't do is you can't summon someone on Erev Shabbos for after Shabbos. Why not? My taima ba'avirita de shapsa kataret. But say first wide line, because we'll say on Erev Shabbos, a person is just too busy. We'll say, and what a beautiful Gemara. So again, interestingly enough, you could summon someone on Nisan for after Nisan, Tishrei for after Tishrei. But on Erev Shabbos, I will say, what is a Yid doing on Erev Shabbos? What is he doing on Erev Shabbos? Getting ready for Shabbos. I will say, Because again, there's so much to being a Shomer Erev Shabbos. We focus so much on being a Shomer Shabbos, which of course, being a Shomer Shabbos is one of the most important things we have. Right? Shabbos is the ultimate covenant, the ultimate bris between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And keeping that bris, keeping that covenant, is the cornerstone of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in addition to keeping, to observing Shabbos, we also have an obligation to be a Shomer Erev Shabbos. And so what does it mean to be a Shomer Erev Shabbos? What it means is, I will say, don't be an 18-minute Jew. Right? There's absolutely no need to dip into those 18 minutes. And if you're doing that, that is a failure to plan properly. Right? I will say, again, you get to the business meetings on time. You do everything else on time. Why is it that Shabbos has to suffer because you don't get it together? Shabbos deserves better. The Shabbos queen deserves better treatment than rushing in the last moment. Structure your life in a way that you could become a true Shomer Erev Shabbos. Because when you treat Erev Shabbos with dignity, Abosai, then at the end of the day, your Shabbos looks fundamentally different as well. When you go into Shabbos benachos, when the home is in order, when life is in order, when people aren't scurrying around, then I will say the air, the aura of Shabbos is so much more amplified and so much more beautiful. Beis Din would not summon people to Beis Din on Erev Shabbos, no matter how egregious it was. We're not summoning people out of Shabbos. Why? Why? Because even someone who needs to be in Beis Din, something's more important. You need to be taking care of your Erev Shabbos preparations. You need to be setting the stage, ultimately, again, for the Shabbos Malkasa to enter in with tranquility, with beauty, with holiness, I will say. That is the power of Erev Shabbos. Rav Nachman, lo yavina zimna, lo libnei kala bekala, lo libnei rigla berigla. So I will say, this is another incredible. We don't summon people. So I will say, the kala is the yarchei kala. Yarchei kala, right? Rashi points out over here. Rashi points out that Libne Kala Bekala, Boin Lishmoa Hadrasha Bechol Shabbos, Ein Omrim Lo Bo Biyom Sheni, Ledin Dimimanav Lo Asil Kala. So remember again, the Kala they refer to over here is the Yarche Kala they went on was every Shabbos. Every Shabbos there was a Shir. So what would happen? We don't summon people to Beis Din during the Shir on Shabbos or in the preemptive Shir. Why? Because what's going to happen? People are simply going to stop coming. Right? Because if everyone knows that that's the time when Beis Din can chaparayin and summon you to Beis Din, so people are not going to come to those shiurim. And obviously we have a vested interest in people coming to learn. So again, with Rav Nachman, people would come before Rav Nachman and they would want to serve summons to people who are coming to the shir. Rav Nachman said, do you think I got everybody together for you, for the Beis Din? Of course not. I will say, but now that there are people who dafka come to the shir in order to avoid the Beis Din, right? So now we'll see people exploiting it. So now we could go ahead and serve the summons ultimately again at the shiurim as well. Incredible. Right? So we'll say back to the Mishnah. So remember again, the Mishnah said, if the person, remember again, so this was, if Hayo Dara Sheish Bo Achrayis Chayovin L'Shalei. So we're back to the case of theft. Masni La Rebbe, the Reb Shem Berei, Dara Sheish Bo Achrayis Mamish. So remember again, this is talking about the situation where Reuven stole, right? Reuven died and now left behind the stolen object to his heirs, or didn't leave behind the stolen object. So the Mishnah said, if there was a Dara Sheish Bo Achrayis, which sounds like real property, ultimately, the Yarshim need to pay it back. So the Gemara says, Masni Rebbe Reb Shimbere, Lo Dover Sheish Bachrayis Mamish. It doesn't literally mean that the stolen object that was left over is real property. Elafilu Par of a Chorish, Bachamar O Machamar Acharov, Chayov Lahachzir. Even if the thief, right, Reuven died, and the stolen object is extant, and it's not real property. It's not real property, right? It's a cow, it's a donkey. Nevertheless, Chayav on the Hachzir, the children are obligated to go ahead and return it. Why? Mipnei Kavod Avihen. Out of deference to their father. So the Gemara says, Baimenei Rav Kahana Merav Mita Umesavala Shulchan Va'ochal Av Mahu. So we'll say, what happens if the stolen object that was left over is not a cow or a donkey? Now we'll say, what's the chap with a cow and a donkey? Everybody sees it. Let's say the father left over the stolen object, it's still extant, but no one sees it. It's something only used inside of the house, like a bed or a table. Are the Yarshim obligated to go ahead and return it? So Mahu Amarlo, Tain Lechacham Vichakemo. Literally give to the wise man, he'll become even wiser, which means, in other words, extrapolate the concept. The concept is that if the stolen item is extant, then the children are obligated to return it, whether it's something that's visible to the public, not visible to the public. And we'll say that is indeed the halacha l'maisa. If Reuven left over a stolen object, then the children must return that stolen object if it is still extant. If it's not extant, then in that type of situation, halacha l'maisa, there would not be an obligation to go ahead and return it. Good. So we'll say a lot more halacha l'maisa to do on that topic. We'll have to come back to it. Mishnah. Ein partin lo miteva samuchsum velo mikis shal gaban veinot lo mehen tzedaka. I so say, totally new topic. Really, really fascinating. Again, I know I owe you a trove of halacha l'maisa. Maybe what we'll do is, we'll say we have a beautiful siyum coming up, Emir Sashem, this coming Thursday night, a really, really special, magnificent siyum. What we have carved into the schedule is a shir on Inyanei Baba Kama. So I think a short shir, and there'll still be refreshments during the shir, and the bar will be open during the shir, so don't worry, you'll be able to keep yourself busy. And I'll say, I think we're going to try to cover some of these topics in that shir. We're going to be diving again, whatever, the schedule and out, I will say. But that's where we're going to, Emir Tzashem, try to zero in on some of this stuff. So Gemara says as follows. So now the Mishnah says, you can't get change from a tax collector. So we'll say, Muchsin and Kishal Gabon. Buchsin, literally translated, is a customs collector, right? Kis Shal Gabon, a gabai is a tax collector. Tax collector. So we'll say, see, you can't get change from any of these people. Now, why? What's the chap? These people are assumed to cheat. They're assumed to collect more than they're really entitled to. Therefore, the Mishnah says, essentially, do not deal financially with them. Don't even ask for change from them, because l'maisa, it's ill-gotten gains. They know it's stucco. You can't go ahead and get stuck. We'll say, this is always a big topic in stucco, about receiving donations from people who have received money in somewhat, what's the right word? Shady, right? Or suspicious. Ways, right? Can you collect, can you receive donations from such an individual? If you're in that parasha, feel free to see me after the shiur, right? We could talk about that offline, right? So I'll say, so l'maisa, you can't go in and even receive tzedakah from them. Aval no tehu mitoch peso mitoch hashuk. Rabbi say, what can you do? If you're getting money from these people, not from their like collection baskets, so to speak, but you're getting money from within their house, or you see them in the marketplace, not when they're operating in their capacity, then that would be fine, because the assumption is they're operating with their money and not with these ill-gotten gains. Right, so let's analyze. So tana. Aval no sin lo dinar, v'no sin lo sashar. So however, again, halacha l'maisa, let's say I have to pay taxes and the tax collector comes along. So I give him the money. I owe half a dinar and I give him a dinar. Obviously, I'm allowed to get change from him in that circumstance. Okay. Sigmar says, muchsin. So I don't understand. What's wrong with the tax collector? Amar Shmuel, dina de machusa dina. I don't understand. We'll say, we're talking about tax collectors. So assumption is the tax collector is operating under the authority of the government. So why can't I go ahead? And I don't understand why. In other words, what's the problem interacting with him on a financial level? Dina de machusa dina. The law of the land is the law. You have to follow the laws of the land. So the Gemara says, no, Amrav Chanina, Barkan, Amr Shmuel, Bamuchas, Shein Lo Kitzva. We'll say, this is talking about a tax collector, a customs collector, who has no limit. So we'll say, sometimes, historically, these positions were given to people who carried favor with the government, and they were easily exploitable. In other words, how much taxes were you entitled to collect? How much are we entitled to collect? As much as you could. In the Dover Sof. So we'll say, so although these were appointed positions, they were easily exploitable. So the Gemara said, "Mamucha she'en lo kitzva." Ultimately, again, he's a tax collector with no limit. Or he was a self-appointed tax collector. It's interesting. So we'll say, so therefore, again, you can't apply dina de malchusa dina only applies in a just government, in a just system. But where you have these positions which were exploited, then halacha l'maisa, dina de malchusa dina does not apply to them. So the Gemara says, others apply this conversation to the following topic. So this is interesting. So taxes were offered levied upon clothing used for commercial purposes, but was not levied upon clothing used for personal purposes. So what's a great way to skirt the law? Put on 10 layers of clothing. This is not commercial, right? This is not merchandise. This is a fashion statement, right? So therefore, I'm wearing 10 layers of clothing. Now, what happens if, let's say, again, the clothing that you're selling is shatness? which is fine. You could do business with shanis. That's not a problem. You just can't wear it. So I must say, but now when I'm wearing it, I'm not really wearing it for the sake of wearing it. I'm wearing it to escape taxes. So the Gemara says, Mas nisin dol Rabbi Akiva. The sanya asur la'ariach hasamechas. So Raisa says, you are not permitted to go ahead and circumvent taxes. Rabbi Shimon or Mishnah Rabbi Akiva, murtel la'ariach hasamechas. No, you're allowed to avoid taxes. You're allowed to avoid taxes. So we'll say, in the case of Kilayim and Shatnez, where they're arguing the Marasavar, Davarshem is Kavin, Motor Marasavar, Davarshem is Kavin, Asar. So in the case of Kilayim, I understand. One is arguing that if you don't have Kavanah to wear it, it's Asar. And one's saying, even if you don't have Kavanah to wear it, it's Motor. So the Mar says, Elala, Riach Bas Amechas, Mishari. But say, are you allowed to avoid taxes? Is that permitted in Halacha? Farmer Shmuel, Dina Damachusadina. The law of the land is the law. And if the land says you have to pay taxes, you have to pay taxes. What's going on over here? No, what are we talking about? People say, we're not talking about legitimate taxes. We're talking about illegitimate taxes. They're saying, I just want to be clear. Right? In other words, a person can say, you know what? I think the IRS tax code is illegitimate, and therefore I am not paying tax. I mean, people do that, right? But Lamaisa, that's not what we're talking about over here. But in other words, you could disagree with institutionalized law, but institutionalized law is still law. This is talking about, let's say, people who are operating outside of a legal system. So a guy who says, I am the tax collector. Maybe he was appointed, maybe how much? Okay, Nu, how much are you entitled to collect as a tax collector? As much as I want. That's what I'll say, illegitimate. So that we don't apply Dina Damachusa Dina to that concept. Others apply to the following case. Nodrin laharagin ulacharamin ulamuchsin. She shall truma, she shall be samelach. Afa pi shall truma, abi shall be samelach. So we'll say, watch this. Let's say there's a guy ultimately, again, who's known, he's a known murderer, right? Or people who try to just take stuff, or tax collectors who try to take stuff, and they want to take my stuff. I'm allowed to lie and say, you know what? I would give you this produce, but you know what? It's truma. It's truma. Or I would give you this produce, but you know what? It already belongs to the king. Right? I could lie in order to avoid giving these people these items. So the Gemara says, well, the mochsin, really? You could lie to avoid the tax collector? Farmer Shmuel, dinan d'malchus adina. How could you lie to avoid the tax collector? Dinan d'malchus adina. Amar rechen yabarkana, mishmuel, b'muchas, shenol kitzva, deribay rabbana, amar b'muchas, ha'omid me'ilav. Again, I will say, same answer. We're talking about these self-appointed tax collectors who are illegitimate. Rav Ashi, amar b'muchas kenani. We're talking about the non-Jewish tax collector. So I will say, what's the chap with the non-Jewish tax collector? The sanya, Yisrael uknani anas sheba'u l'din. So I will say, now watch this. If a Jew, right, and a Kanani, a non-Jew, I will say, who is an anas? I will say, the title of anas means someone who has a reputation of being a totally unscrupulous individual who cheats people out of stuff all of the time. So now a Jew and this non-Jew who has this reputation are coming to din together. What's the halacha? Im ata yocha lezakeu b'dini Yisrael zakeu. Va'amar lo kach dineu kach dineinu. So I will say, the goal over here, I will say, is very simple. The goal over here is to find the Jew innocent. In other words, I will say, why? We have a societal interest over here. Even if the Jew, technically speaking, owes this Kanani money, we do not want to vindicate this Kanani in a court of law, because what we're going to do is the machzik yidei ovrei avera. We're going to go ahead and give legitimacy to people who are constantly cheating others. So if you can find the Jew innocent by Jewish law, find him some. But dinei Kananim zakeu, non-Jewish law, find him innocent like that. Va'amr lo, kach dinchem. V'im lav, bo'in alav ba'akifin divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael says, then find some other creative way to exonerate the Jew. Now we'll say, understand what's happening over here. And this is actually like a little bit strange. What we're willing to do is, even if the Kanani is the one who is just in this case, we need to find him guilty and exonerate the Jew. Why? Because I will say, we need to be able to put a stop to what this Kanani is doing, and we need to be able to put a stop to it within a legal mechanism. So however you need to do that, Jewish law, non-Jewish law, some other creative legal loophole, do it. Do it. So Rabbi Kiva Omer ain't bana la b'akiv mekidosh. Rabbi Kiva says you can't do that. You cannot do that. You cannot go ahead and subvert the legal system. Because if you subvert the legal system, Rabbi Kiva says mipnei kiddush Hashem. Rabbi says he doesn't mean kiddush Hashem. What does he mean? What does he mean? Chil Hashem. Rabbi Kiva says no, you can't do that. You can't do that. A court system. Rabbi says again, I understand that this Kanani is a cheat. I understand that we have an imperative to stop him. Find other ways to stop him. Right? Bezin has other mechanisms. But when two people come before a Beis Din for judgment, judges have to judge correctly. They have to look at the case in front of them, and they have to adjudicate correctly, and that's it. And I, the Kanani, is terrible, and he's cheating everyone. Okay, put him in Kherim, flog him, whatever you need to do, whatever you need to do. But you can't subvert justice. Justice has to be served, and the case in front of you has. Otherwise, the whole thing is a sham. Otherwise, the whole thing is a joke, and you make a Chil Hashem. So profound. Rabbi Kiva, the Gemara says, Rabbi Kiva, Taima Dika Kiddush Hashem. Rabbi Kiva's only concern is Chil Hashem over here. Ha'lecha Kiddush Hashem. Boy, I will say, if there wasn't the Chil Hashem, then Inachinami, we'd find some way to stop this Kanani. The Gezel Kanani Mishari, 1 second. Is it permitted to steal from a Kanani, from a non-Jew? Vatanya, Amar Shimon, Dover Zed, Dar Shem Ekiva, Kisheba, Mizfirin, Minayam, the Gezel Kanani Shu Asra. How do you know that you are not permitted to steal from a non-Jew? Talmud Omar, the pasuk says, "Achari nimkar gula tielo." So we'll say this is talking about a Jew who is sold to a non-Jew as a servant, as an eved. So we'll say, what's talacha? The Jewish community, his family, his friends, his community have an obligation to redeem him from servitude. So we'll say, what can't you do? You can't go and just steal him from the non-Jew. You got to buy him out. So the Gemara says, Amud Beis, Shelo yimshechenu v'yetze. So we'll say, you can't just show up at the non-Jew's house and grab Reuven and say, we're taking back our brother. Rather, what do you have to do, Abosai? What do you have to do? You have to buy him back. So what do you see from that? That you can't steal from a non-Jew. That Gezel Akum, stealing from a non-Jew, is going to be prohibited. Yachol Yiglom Alav. So ultimately, again, you would think that, therefore, Abosai, this is great. Well, once you have to buy him back, maybe you should think that the Kanani should be able to charge any price he wants. Talmud Omar, v'chishav im konehu, yidaktik im konehu. No. Abosai, again, you have to buy him back. But we're going to pay, we're not paying retail. I'm saying we're going to pay wholesale. In other words, we're going to negotiate over here. So again, as much as I have an obligation to go ahead and pay to redeem my brother, I don't have to be taken advantage of. Okay. I'm Rabbi Yosef Lokasha. So what's happening over here? We have this whole thing over here where, remember, you have this case. We just need more time. We have this situation where the Jew is coming to a Beis Din with this non-Jew who has this reputation of being a cheat. So now, I would say, we feel this moral imperative to go ahead and shut down this non-Jew. We have to stop him. So Rabbi Akiva says, you can't subvert justice because of Chil Hashem. Right? Which indicates to us that if there wasn't Chil Hashem, Rabbi Akiva would have no problem essentially skewing the system to take the money from the non-Jew to shut him down. Which essentially, I would say, would mean that we'd be stealing money from the non-Jew in order to shut him down, to prevent him from cheating the Jew. Which sounds like you're allowed to steal from a non-Jew. So it sounds like, right? Now, obviously, there's a greater good that's being served over here, a societal good, but it sounds like it's mutter. The Gemara says, but it's not mutter. You're not allowed to steal from a non-Jew. So what's going on over here? To which the Gemara says, Yosef Lokashia, Habiknani Habiger Toshav. So we'll say, interesting, talking about two different non-Jews. One is talking about a Kanani, which is a regular Gentile, versus a Ger Toshav. We'll say, what's a Ger Toshav? A Ger Toshav is a non-Jew who lives in Eretz Yisrael, who has accepted the Shabbat Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the seven Noachai laws. That individual, theft is prohibited from him. Okay? I'm really a Baye. So we'll say, I just want to point out something very important over here. When we speak about theft being, quote-unquote, permitted from a non-Jew, theft is not permitted from anyone. The Gemara is talking about an extreme case over here where we have a Kanani who is a known criminal, and he's showing up in Beis Din with a Jew, and we have an opportunity now to shut this guy down. So the question is, are we permitted to skew justice to find the Kanani guilty in order to go ahead and stop him from engaging in this deleterious behavior anymore? That's the Shaila. But effectively, what that would be doing would be stealing from him. I just want to be clear. That's the Shailin question. Could we steal from the non-Jew for the greater good? And when we say steal, we mean skew judgment for the greater good of the community. But I will say, of course, stealing from any human being is always going to be usur. But we're asking in this extreme case, are you permitted to, quote-unquote, steal from the Akum to serve the greater good of the community? It's incredible. But both of these cases are written together. Lo lecha, so the Gemara says, lo lecha, ela leger, shenemar, velager, ולא לגר צדיק, אלא לגר תושב, שנאמר, או לגר תושב, משפחת גר, זה עובי כוכבים. So כשהוא אומר, או לאגר, זה הנמכר לעבודות כוכבים. So we'll say, but the problem is the following, that גר תושב and Akum are written together, אלא רבא לא קשה. So Rabbi says, you're right, it's not a contradiction. Sorry, I read those psukim quickly, but it's not a contradiction. It's not a contradiction. Rather, again, kan b'gzelo, the kan b'hafkas hava also. Shabbos say, interestingly enough, there may be a distinction between stealing from the ger or stealing from the akum versus, Shabbos say, versus going ahead and preventing his debts from being repaid. In other words, there's a distinction between going ahead and actively extracting money versus non-repayment. Those may be distinctions. And therefore, I will say again, there may be more room, essentially, in the discussion of non-repayment. You may have a little bit more flexibility with an akum, especially in this case where he's unscrupulous and he's acting in an immoral fashion. There may be more room to say, we're going to prevent the debt from getting paid back to him versus from actually extracting money from him. Only Abaye, Eved Ivri, half cost, hava asahu. I will say, but here's what's interesting, is the case of Eved Ivri is ultimately, again, Havkas Hava also. Rava Latame Da'ama Rava Eved Ivri Gufa Kanoi. No, Rava's different, because what Rava says in the case of Eved Ivri, the Eved Ivri is literally physically acquired by the Adon, even by the Gentile master. Amar Bibi Bargila, Amar Shemin Chasida, Gezel Kanani Asr. You are not allowed to steal from a Kanani. Gezel Kanani is Asr. Okay, so the Gemara says, Avedasa Mutaras. But however, again, if a Kanani loses something, you're not obligated to return it. The mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda only applies to a Jew, doesn't apply to an Akum. And therefore, if he loses an Akum, you're permitted to go ahead and keep it. Gezela Aser, you're not allowed to steal from him. Why? Da'am Rav Huna, minayin legezel Kanani shu Aser. From where do you know that stealing from a Kanani is Aser? So now, Shinemar, viachalta es kol ha'anu asher shem lukecha nosein l'chal. So also listen to this. The pasuk says, you shall consume all of the nations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivers to you. Which means what? Bizman she misrim biyadcha. I will say, the only time that you are permitted to keep spoils is when? During war. Right? You go out to war, you conquer your enemy, you're allowed to keep the spoils of war. But I will say, but again, if it's not wartime, you are not permitted to take something from someone else if it doesn't belong to you, even if that person is an akum. However, avedasa muteres, but the lost object of an akum is permitted. Why? How do you know that the lost object of a Kanani is mutar? Shneamar l'chol avedas achicha. Pasuk says, any lost object from your brother. La'achicha atamachzir. Bosi, you're only obligated to return a lost object to your brother. V'atamachzir l'kanani. But you're not obligated to return a lost object to a Kanani. I ve'ema hanimili delo asiliyadei. So I will say, maybe that's a lost object that I see on the street. I'm not obligated to return that to a Kanani. Delo mechayiv la duri basra. Aval hecha da asiliyadei. But maybe when the object comes to my hand, in other words, I will say, if I literally picked up the object, maybe then I do have a mitzvah Hashavas Aveda, I'm Ravina, umitzasa da'al asiliya de mashma. Ultimately, Ravina says, the pasuk of mitzasa, you find it has an inference that the object is in your hand, and even though the object is in your hand, halacha l'maisa, you're still not obligated to return it. So therefore, I will say, where the Gemara ends off right over here is the following. The Gemara ends off is, gezel akum, stealing from an akum, asr. Usher. And I will say again, I just want to be clear. The only time the Gemara is entertaining it is in this extreme case of these two litigants who showed up. And now there was a possibility of the Beis Din to shut down this unscrupulous Akum. Gezel Akum is going to be Usher. Ultimately, again, Avedas Akum. What happens if the Akum goes ahead and loses an object? So then Halacha Lamaisa, there is no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. There is no mitzvah of returning a lost object. That's whether you see the object, and that's whether ultimately, again, you go ahead and the object comes into your possession, no obligation to return it. Now, I will say the one complicating factor, not complicating, but the one issue that interplays with all of this that we have not yet discussed is the concept of Kiddush Hashem versus Chil Hashem. Right? So, let me say it differently. Not Kiddush Hashem, Chil Hashem. Where Chil Hashem comes in, I will say, so does that skew the conversation at all? Clearly, Rabbi Akiva already weighed in that wherever there's a possibility of Chil Hashem, you got to be cognizant of that and have to act accordingly. Does that impact the halacha we just mentioned? To be continued tomorrow, I will say, Shkoyach.